everyone, and welcome to the fifth and sadly the final episode of Catastrophe Month. It has been a wild ride. How are you feeling? I know this is your baby.
It is my baby, but I feel like I really understand women who go through labor now, because now I'm just like a little happy that it's over.
Yeah, so now it's like we're so all
now,
out there.
Now it just gets to like exist and like just chill out. Like we can be homies now, but like the process of doing it makes you want to scream.
I get that.
That's what makes this blood and guts. Okay. We scream not in terror, but out of pure frustration.
Yeah. Just before we start, I have a bit of true crime news. This isn't a true crime episode, but I wanted to talk about it because we actually covered this case. This was one of like the earlier episodes that I did. Rodney Alcala, also known as the dating game killer, the serial killer, you know, that appeared on the dating game and won, you know, he died this Saturday at age 77. He's been on death row since like either 79. It might be 97. I might be getting my days mixed up, but he's been on death row a long time, and now he's finally gone. He's dead. Yay. I just wanted to mention it because we covered him, but I found this out literally about a half hour ago because I saw the article. I was at work.
Clearly doing a very, very good job at work.
Yeah, I am.
Totally present in the moment, invested in the company.
Look, okay.
Single-minded.
Nothing was happening. All right?
Employee of the month.
Leave me alone. Okay. Anyway, a serial killer is dead. Good. Let's get this show on the road.
I'll drink to that. If I need buy my water. Okay. Do you know the two big kitties we are covering today?
Today, I believe, is the Griffin and the Nemean Lion.
Yes.
I hope I said that right.
I say it like Nemean.
Oh. I think I've heard it Nemean.
I think both are right.
Okay.
Because it's whether it's from Nemea or Nemea. I say Nemea because that is how names are pronounced back in the day.
I wasn't...
In classical Greece. So I'm just taking a stab. I think both are right.
How do you say it?
Nemea. Nemean. Oh. Lion.
This one is saying...
Nemean?
Yeah. Or Nymean. It's yeah. Not, it's definitely not that.
I have heard it multiple ways. And okay. People say all the names of crap from classical Greece.
Right. Anyway.
Doesn't matter. I'll call it the Nemean Lion because that way we'll be together.
Okay.
We'll be together. But okay. It doesn't even matter because we're talking about the Griffin first and we both know how to say it. So.
Right.
Cha-ching. Okay. I wrote this first note and now I realize that like it was pointless to do this because I wrote the Griffin and then wrote alternate spellings of it, but they're all pronounced the same. So
nice.
The
Google
had to say was Griffin, also spelled Griffin or Griffin. But here, most popular is Griffin ending in I-N. It's also spelled Griffin as O-N, or one that looks like it should be pronounced Griffin, which is with a Y and a P-H.
Okay. If you want to Google the spell, just Google the spellings.
Really, the moral of the story is you can just phonetically put in any spelling of this creature and you will be accurate. You didn't do anything. You can use I's, a Y, O, a P-H. You'll get there. It knows. Yeah. History knows. But either, whatever you spell it, traces its roots back to late and medieval Latin, which was Gryphes or Gryfo, which came from Old French Griffon. The derivation of the word remains uncertain, but it could be related to the Greek word Gryphos, meaning curved or hooked. but it may have also been an Anatolian loan word or a related Hebrew word. I liked curved or hooked because it makes me think of like the eagle's talons.
Yeah, that's cool.
But, you know, as with history, people are just shooting blind. So, really, I can say whatever I want, and it could probably be backed up. Anyways, the griffin is a legendary creature with the body, tail, and back legs of a lion, the head and wings of an eagle, and occasionally possessing an eagle's talons as its front feet. Which sounds wild.
But... Wait, so back half of...
Back body, is... tail, back legs of a lion.
Got you.
Head, half the time the front legs and wings of an eagle.
Got you.
But it can go either way with the front legs.
Mm-hmm.
People just can't do whatever.
Mm-hmm.
They just spin a wheel, you know.
Yeah.
Lion or bird. because the lion was traditionally considered to be the king of beasts, and on the other hand, the eagle as the king of the birds or king of the sky... By the Middle Ages, the griffin was thought to be an especially powerful and majestic creature. Since classical antiquity, griffins were known for guarding treasures and priceless possessions. And in medieval heraldry, the griffin became a Christian symbol of divine power, as well as becoming a guardian of the divine.
Nice. Secret, like, secret agent griffin.
I would watch that movie.
Bodyguard griffin.
Played, voiced by Jackie Chan.
It's the bodyguard. I don't know anything about the bodyguard, but like it's the bodyguard, but like Whitney Houston is like a griffin or something.
Oh my god.
I don't know anything about the bodyguard, so if that is not the plot of the movie, I'm sorry, Whitney Houston. Moving on.
Well, Whitney Houston is not going to be playing anything.
Well, I know, but just posthumously, I'm sorry, Whitney Houston, if I got the plot of The Bodyguard wrong. Oh, but it says The Bodyguard in the title.
I'm so sorry, Miss Houston.
Miss Houston. I'm so sorry.
Miss Whitney, I am so sorry. Okay.
Moving on.
Anyways. Interestingly, some large species of old world vultures are called griffines, including the griffin vulture. And the scientific name for the Andean condor is Vultur gryphus, which is Latin for griffin vulture. And in the Catholic Douay Rheims version of the Bible, it uses the word griffin for a creature referred to as a vulture or ossifrage in other English translations. It's found around, I can't remember, Leviticus 11:13, maybe. But, like, look at him. Look at this griffin making his way into the Bible.
Look at him doing his thing.
Famous. That's how you know that you made it. Okay. In mythology standards, making it into the Bible is like getting a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame.
You're right. I would agree with that analogy.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I'm in it.
True, you are.
So are you, but in a less cool way.
Yeah, I think I think my whole story was I just really wanted a kid. And she also, like, owned slaves and sent them out into the desert, I think.
Oh my god. Was Biblical Sarah barren?
Yes. No, remember? She was that old lady that, like, really wanted a child with Abraham, wow. But couldn't. But,
oh my god.
But then God blessed her with one.
Okay. Moving on to forms found in legend and art. Most statuary representations of griffins depict them with bird-like talons, although in some older illustrations, griffins do have the lion's forelimbs as well as, like, the hindquarters and rest of the body. The eagle's head is conventionally given prominent ears. They're sometimes described as, like, the lion's ears, but they're often elongated, so think, like, a horse, kind of, but feathered.
Okay.
Yeah.
I love horse ears.
I know, you're a horse girl.
I'm not...
Yes, you are. Infrequently, griffins are portrayed without wings, or a wingless, like, eagle-headed lion is just identified as a griffin. Like, they're like, sure, whatever. Close enough. In the 15th century and later heraldry, Such a beast may be called an elkie or a teethong in place of a griffin.
Okay.
Which are words that I feel like came out of nowhere.
Yeah, they really deviated from the they I feel like they just got bored and just made other names.
That's what I'm about to do. We were not a stuff to talk about. This is a creature which has been around since 2 weeks ago. I drew it here for you guys to see.
Yeah.
I think he's really cute. When depicted on coats of arms, the griffin is called the Opinicus, which may be derived from the Greek name Authinicus, which is referring to the serpent constellation. In these depictions, it has the body of a lion with either two or four legs, the head of an eagle or a dragon, the wings of an eagle, and a camel's tail.
Why would they name it after a serpent constellation?
Not named after, just derived from.
Oh, okay. I was
Which I
like,
feel like could work if, like, with the dragon head version, I could at least see the steps that were taken to get there.
yeah, I was like, why are they naming it after a snake? Isn't that not at all what a griffin is?
You know what? History is messy, okay? That's the biggest PSA from this, is history is a mess.
Yeah.
Representations of griffin-like hybrids with four legs and a beaked head appeared in ancient Iranian and ancient Egyptian art dating back to before 3000 BC, which is a long
Crazy.
time.
Yeah.
In Egypt, a griffin-like animal can be seen in a cosmetic palette from a city which I believe is pronounced Hierakonpolis. I think. Yeah.
I mean, I don't know,
Hierakonpolis.
so.
It's spelled like Hierakonpolis, but I know that that's not. I think it's Hierakonpolis. Anyways, the cosmetic palette is known as the Two Dog Palette, which is dated to around 3300 to 3100 BC. In Iranian mythology, the griffin is called a Shirdal, which translates to lion eagle. It has appeared in ancient art of Iran since the late 2nd millennium BC. And Shirdals appeared on cylinder seals from Susa as early as 3000 BC. There are also common motifs in the art of Luristan, which is like the north and northwest, I think, region of Iran in the Iron Age, as well as Achaemenid art. So, homie has been around
Yeah.
for way longer than I thought it had been.
Homie has been traveling.
Homie is around. A road trip with the griffin.
Yeah.
Road trip with a homie. Griffin type creatures, which combined raptor heads and mammal bodies, were depicted in the Levant, Syria, and Anatolia in the Middle Bronze Age, which dates to around 1950 to 1550 BC. And early depictions of griffin types in Minoan art are found in the 15th century BC frescoes in the throne room of the Bronze Age Palace of Knossos, as restored by my good homie, Sir Arthur Evans.
Your personal homie.
Yeah, it's me and Arthur
Okay.
hanging out.
Okay.
Bird mammal composites were a decorative theme in archaic and classical Greek art, which is where I first learned what a griffin was. Classical Greece. But they became quite popular in the 6th and 5th centuries BC, which were when the Greeks first began to record accounts of the grips or griffin creature from travelers to Asia. And in Central Asia, the griffin image was included into the Scythian animal style artifacts of the 6th to 4th centuries BC, but there are no writings to explain their meaning. So once again, history is messy and undefined.
Nice.
Yeah, it's so great.
I love when no one writes things down.
It's how it, I mean, they probably did. We probably just don't have it.
True. They pr someone remembers. I mean, the someone who remembers is probably dead, but someone knows.
It was like 8 centuries, like a ton of centuries ago.
Yeah.
Since the 4th century BC, that is 2400 to 2600 years ago.
So definitely dead.
I don't know. Somebody might still be alive, just still holding on to this knowledge.
They're not.
I don't know if I would want to live to age 2600.
Yeah, no.
That would be a lot.
That'd be a bit too much.
Just a little bit. Griffin images appeared in the art of Achaemenid Persian Empire. Russian jewelry historian Elena Neva maintained that they considered the griffin to be a protector from evil, witchcraft, and secret slander. But once again, no writings exist from this period of Persia to support her claim.
Secret slander?
Yeah, basically, like, it will... A griffin just backhands you.
A griffin just, like, kicks you in the face for just gossiping about, like, the neighborhood Karen.
I would say thank you.
Yeah.
I would say thank you, and what would I have to say to do this again?
Griffin bodyguard, like, seriously.
Oh my god. Mm-hmm. We're not talking about that anymore. Robin Lane Fox in Alexander the Great remarks that a lion griffin attacks a stag in a pebble mosaic of the 4th century BC at Pella. It possibly served as an emblem of the kingdom of Macedon, or a personal one of Alexander's successor, Antipater. The Pisa griffin is a large bronze sculpture that has been in Pisa in Italy since the Middle Ages, although it is in fact of Islamic origin. It is the largest bronze medieval Islamic sculpture known to exist. It's only over 3 feet tall, but still, it's like huge for the time.
Okay. Yeah.
You just have to trust me. I know in your head you're like, oh my god, this is like a skyscraper griffin. It is toddler.
Yeah, just trust me on this. It was big.
You're a small child. But it was probably created in the 11th century AD in El Andalus, which is referred to today as Islamic Spain. From about 1100 AD, it was placed on a column on the roof of the Pisa Cathedral until it was replaced by a replica in 1832. The original is now in the Museo dell'Opera del Duomo, which is the Cathedral Museum in Pisa. So add that to your bucket list, you guys.
Yeah.
Go see the 3 foot tall bronze griffin.
I would go.
I just know he's cute.
Oh, he is cute.
Yeah.
Oh my god. I'm posting this. Okay, continue. Okay. He's very...
There are several ancient mythological creatures which are similar to the griffin. These include the Lamassu, which is an Assyrian protective deity, often depicted with a bull or lion's body, eagle wings, and a human head. Things are always worse when they have a human head.
That's what I was just about to say. I'm like, ew. You had me until... You had me until human head.
Like, yuck. Leave them out of this, okay? You were so yeah. Cool.
Yeah.
Ugh. Sumerian and Akkadian mythology features the demon Anzu, which is a half-man, half-bird, associated with the chief sky god Enlil. This was a divine storm bird linked with the southern wind and the thunder clouds. Jewish mythology speaks of the Ziz, which resembles Anzu, as well as the ancient Greek Phoenix. The Bible mentions the Ziz in Psalms 50:11, which is a creature similar to a cherubim. The cherub, or it's also called a sphinx, was very popular in Phoenician iconography. In ancient Crete, griffins became very popular and were portrayed in various media. A similar creature is the Minoan genius, which is a fantastic mythological creature that was common in the Minoan art of the Bronze Age civilization in ancient Crete. It is portrayed with the head of a lion or a hippopotamus or other animals. And the rest of it is kind of like a griffin. It's just like a griffin adjacent. Griffin, yeah. The worst. Griffin the worst.
Portrayed with like any animal you could think of.
Any head, yeah.
Yeah, it's basically.
Seen on Minoan seals, often in pairs, as supporters of larger deities. In the Hindu religion, Garuda is a large bird-like creature serving as a mount or vahana of Lord Vishnu. It is also the name for the constellation Akila, one we most recognize today as like a constellation of an eagle. But I like knowing what other cultures see constellations as, so I added that in.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, in medieval legend, griffins not only mated for life, But if either partner died, the other would continue the rest of its life alone, never to search for a new mate. They were also, by the way, said to have, like, they would lay eggs. Okay, so just imagine these little cute, like, kitten eagle things just coming out of eggs. They were supposed to be solid gold.
The eggs or the children?
The eggs.
Oh. Well, if you made it sound like the children were straight up gold.
I don't think I made it sound it like that at all.
I feel
think
like
that
you
was
did.
You. I, that was you. That was you, okay?
Oh my god.
Okay. The griffin was therefore allegedly, heavy emphasis on allegedly, made into a sort of emblem for the church's opposition to remarriage. Also being a union of an aerial bird and terrestrial beast, so kind of a combination of the earthly and the divine. It was also seen in Christendom to be a symbol of Jesus.
Oh. Boo. Great. Great.
As such, it can be found sculpted on some churches and church buildings.
Yeah, I feel like I've seen that somewhere.
Yeah. According to Stephen Fryer's New Dictionary of Heraldry, a griffin's claw was believed to have medicinal properties, and one of its feathers was said to have the power to restore sight to the blind.
Oh, so he really is like Jesus. I mean, that's insane.
Oh my god. Goblets fashioned from griffin claws, which were actually antelope horns, and griffin eggs, which were actually ostrich eggs, were highly prized in medieval European courts. Which I love that they just had that going around. Like, that's the equivalent of, like, an Amazon scam.
Yeah, I
that's they have me like, my griffin claw. This little
yeah, back just, then like, when they used to sell, idiot. Like, back when they used to sell, like, not idols, what are they called? Like
talismans and stuff.
There was a certain word for them selling like religious things back then.
Relics.
Relics, yes. When they used to sell relics and things like that, that's just mm-hmm. like modern day Amazon.
Yeah, like
scams.
Saint body parts and stuff.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Okay. The griffin was only really said in lore to have one legendary creature listed as its offspring. Can you guess what it is?
Okay, give me a singular hint.
It can also fly.
Okay, Pegasus.
No, but you're so close.
Oh my god, I don't think
you are so close.
A unicorn. Wait, unicorns can't fly.
Wrong way.
Wrong way. What does that mean? Wrong way. We have to get closer to bird. Okay. Yeah. I don't think I know this.
A hippogriff.
Really?
A beast with the front half of an eagle and the hind half of a horse. It was said to supposedly be the offspring of a griffin and a mare.
Okay. Well, Pegasus was a good guess. I was close.
Yeah, you just went more towards horse. You needed a little more eagle.
Yes.
But yeah, I didn't know that prior to doing this research. So.
I didn't either. That's amazing.
It was amazing. when Genoa emerged as a major seafaring power in the Middle Ages and the Renaissance, griffins were commenced to be depicted as part of the Republic's coat of arms. They were shown rearing at the sides of the shield, which bore the cross of St. George. But by the 12th century, the appearance of the griffin was substantially fixed. And there's like a quote about it. So all its bodily members are like a lion's, but its wings and mask, meaning head and face, are like an eagle's. It was not yet clear if its forelimbs are those of an eagle or of a lion. Although the description implies the latter, the, like, illustration that accompanied this was kind of, like, ambiguous. So really it was just left up to, like, the heralds and everybody else to clarify it based on how they wanted it represented.
Okay.
I think, as far as I could tell, most people tended to go for, like, most of the front arms would be of a lion, except for, like, the paw part, which was the talons. So, like, it was shown to be, like, furry still until, like, the hand, which was the talons.
I feel like that's really weird, though.
That was, like, the whole arm of, like, just this thin, spindly bird leg.
Yeah, I feel like that's weird, though.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, this was also the Middle Ages. He had worse things to do.
True.
Yeah, I don't know. I haven't drawn the art for the griffin yet, but I think that might be the way that I have to go, because the way that I would have to size up those arms to make it look right.
Yeah.
I could see that being the reason why they did just, like, the talon part and then part of, like, the leg fade into fur, is because proportionally it would be insane.
Yeah, that just doesn't, I don't know. It doesn't, I feel like it wouldn't look right.
Yeah, I don't know. It's a lot. In heraldry, the griffin's amalgamation of lion and eagle parts represented courage and boldness, and it was always drawn to combat powerful or fierce monsters. It was used to denote strength and military courage, as well as a symbol of leadership. Griffins are portrayed with the rear body of a lion, the eagle's head with erect ears, a feathered breast, and the four legs of an eagle, which always included sharpened claws and talons. So, you know, you're like ready for battle. And these features are said to indicate a combination of intelligence being represented from the eagle and the raw strength of a lion.
Just the raw power.
Yeah. They were all furries, but that's okay. They may be shown in heraldry in a variety of poses, but in British heraldry, they are never shown with their wings closed.
Never.
Not never.
Let him relax.
Not never. He can't relax. He's a symbol of military courage. He's a veteran. Salute
yeah.
the flag.
Salute the flag.
Get up.
Oh my god.
All right. Heraldic griffins use the same attitude terminology as the lion, with the exception being that a lion, like, can you picture a lion's pose on, like, an old shield or something where it's, like, facing the side? Think about, like, the Gryffindor symbol, you know,
right.
how the lion is posed?
Mm-hmm.
That is described as, like, rampant. The lion is in a rampant, like, position. The griffin is instead described as sedient, meaning that it is shown with both forelegs raised in the air, with the wings elevated. And it's a term only reserved to, like, winged quadrupeds, so it means that it's griffins and dragons, pretty much.
The only two.
Yeah. But it's, like, it's pretty much the same pose. The only reason that it's different is because there's the other elevated aspect of the wing. But that is, like, the pose that it's shown in.
Right.
All the time.
Mm-hmm.
In British heraldry, a male griffin is shown without wings. Its body is instead covered in tufts of formidable spikes, sometimes with a short tusk emerging from the forehead, as for a unicorn.
So, like, little unicorn vibes.
Just a little. This distinction is not found outside of British heraldry. It's only them.
Thank you, British heraldry.
I don't know. Even with it, male griffins were much rarer than, like, the winged ones, which were not given a specific name. They were just griffins. It's even possible that the male griffin, so without the wings and the weird spiky and whatever, originated as, like, a derivation of, like, the panther. So, like, pretty much just all cat. But they just spiced it up with the head.
Yeah. Of an eagle. All kitty, but, like, let's do something crazy with the head.
Yeah, mostly kitty. Just a little.
Yeah.
As a treat.
You can have a little kitty as a treat.
There is also a variant of the griffin called the sea griffin, which is also termed the griffin marine. It possesses the head and legs of the more common griffin and the hindquarters of a fish or mermaid.
Shut up.
Yeah, sea griffins are present on the coat of arms of a number of German noble families.
Shut up. Sea kitty?
Sea kitty.
Oh,
wow.
Oh, my God.
Another variant is the opuntus, which is depicted with all four legs being those of a lion. Occasionally, its tail may be that of a camel, or its wings may be altogether absent. It was kind of rarely used, but it appears in the arms of the worshipful company of barbers.
As in, like...
No.
Okay. Glad we just had that conversation right there.
In architectural decoration, the griffin is usually represented as a four-footed beast with the wings and head of an eagle, usually with horns. Interesting. I don't know. It seems like people really didn't know what to do with the ears.
Yeah.
They were like, okay, it's gotta be something.
Yeah.
The statues that mark the entrance to the city of London are sometimes mistaken for griffins, but they are in fact Tudor dragons, which are the supporters of the city's arms. They pretty much look exactly the same, except for the fact that they can be most easily distinguished by their wings, which are more like membranous, like a dragon or like a bat, rather than the feathered wings of a griffin.
Okay.
Yeah, dropping noted. Knowledge on you. That way you can be cultured when you visit the city of London.
Yeah.
That way when you take your ethnic travels to the slums of Europe. Okay. Okay. I'm gonna deviate a little, okay? Because there's something I found out about this that I have to talk about.
Okay.
Griffins may have... their existence and depiction and everything else may have possibly been influenced by some fossils, okay? Their griffins were possibly influenced by dinosaurs.
Really?
Yeah.
You mentioned a raptor earlier.
Yeah, but this is, like, even more. Adrian Mayer, who was a classical folklorist and historian of science, has speculated that the way that the Greeks imagined griffins from the 7th century BC onwards may have been influenced in part by the fossilized remains of beaked dinosaurs, such as the Protoceratops. Mayer argues that the Protoceratops fossils, as seen by ancient observers, may have been interpreted as evidence of a half-bird, half-mammal creature, and argues that over-repeated retelling, drawing, or recopying of its, like, bony neck frill, which, I know, like, it was fragile and may have frequently broken or entirely weathered away by the time anybody got to it, may have become, in interpretation, the really big mammal-type external ears that people didn't know what to do with. And its beak may have been treated as evidence of a part-bird nature, which may in turn have led to people just slapping bird-type wings onto it. So they were like, oh, this thing is kind of a bird, and birds have wings, so it's gotta have wings.
So, like, same thing. Right, guys? Come on!
Paleontologist Mark P. Whitten has contested this hypothesis because he argues that it ignores the existence of griffin depictions throughout the Near East, which would date to long before Mayer posits that the Greeks became aware of the fossils. Whitten further argues that the anatomies of griffins in Greek art are clearly based on those of living creatures, especially of lions and eagles. And there are no features of griffins in Greek art that can only be explained by the hypothesis that griffins were based on fossils. Because Greek accounts of the creature, like, they describe them as living creatures, not ancient skeletons, which definitely would have made it into the accounts, have been like, yo, we found a griffin skeleton. I'm gonna sell the bones on the black market. And that some of the details in Greek accounts altogether suggest that griffins are purely imaginary, not inspired by fossils, just another mythological creature without a lot of real world interpretation, besides the fact that they knew it was an eagle and a lion because they had seen them.
because they had seen them.
They appear a ton in literature. I have a couple, like, epic quotes and stuff, but I'll pick my favorites.
Okay.
Flavius Philostratus mentioned them in The Life of Apollonius of Tyana. As to the gold which the griffins dig up, there are rocks which are spotted with drops of gold, as with sparks, which this creature can carry because of the strength of its beak. For these animals do exist in India and are held in veneration as being sacred to the sun, and the Indian artists, when they represent the sun, yoke the four of them abreast to draw the images. In size and strength, they resemble lions, but having this advantage over them that they have wings. They will attack them, and they get the better of elephants and dragons alike. I would pay money to watch that brawl.
Yeah, like
money. Yeah. Mad money. My life savings.
That would be insane.
Oh my god. Oh my god.
Okay. That'd be literally insane.
The tiger alone is beyond their powers of attack, because in swiftness it rivals the winds. They are, according to the tales of poets, the they being griffins, not tigers, guardians of gold and devoted to the gold reefs. Which I love, because it made sense that they guard gold because their eggs are gold.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, it's like they're guarding their children.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Griffins are used widely in Persian poetry. Rumi is one such poet who writes in reference to griffins. In Dante Alighieri's Divine Comedy, after Dante and Virgil's journey through hell and purgatory has concluded, Dante meets a chariot which is dragged by a griffin in earthly paradise.
Oh, I want to be dragged by a griffin in a chariot.
I thought you were just going to end it there. You just get rode on by a griffin.
I want to get dragged by a griffin, period.
Me too. Woo! Sir John Mandeville wrote about them in his 14th century book of travels. In this country be many griffins, more plenty than in any other country. Some men said that they have the body upward as an eagle and beneath as a lion. But one griffin hath the body more great and is more strong than 8 lions, and more great and stronger than 100 eagles such as we have amongst us. For he hath his talons so long and so large and great upon his feet, as though they were horns of great oxen, so that men made cups of them to drink from. And of their ribs and of the pens of their wings, men made bows full strong to shoot with arrows. John Milton in Paradise Lost Book 2 refers to the legend of the griffin when describing Satan. And griffins appear in the fairy tales Jack the Giant Killer, the Griffin, and the Singing Springing Lark. Which I've never heard of in my life.
Jack the who now?
The Giant Killer.
Oh, I thought you... I interpreted that as Jack the Giant Killer, like as he was a killer that was large.
Okay. And oh my god.
And I was like, what?
Oh my god. Pomponius Mela is quoted by Romer in 1998. Said, I have this quote from here, which I love. Oh, it's so cute. After that comes a region of very rich soil, but quite uninhabitable because griffins, a savage and tenacious breed of wild beasts, love, to an amazing degree, the gold that is mined from deep within the earth there, and because they guard it with an amazing hostility to those who set foot there. Because their kids are in gold, too!
I know! I love that.
Good parents. Hell yeah. Tiger mom. Lion mom. Isidore of Seville, as quoted by Brehat in 1912, said, "The Gryphes are so called because they are winged quadrupeds. This kind of wild beast is found in the Hyperborean mountains. In every part of their body they are lions, and wings and heads they are like eagles, and they are fierce enemies of horses. Moreover, they tear men to pieces."
Nice!
I too want to tear men to pieces! Me next! The griffin kicks you in the face. You spin around only to find me holding a baseball bat. Alright, in pop culture, modern appearances, last part for the griffin. I know this one was long, but it'll be balanced out by the fact that the Nemean lion is really short because it only appears once. Griffins, like many other fictional creatures, frequently appear within works under the fantasy genre. So examples of fantasy-oriented franchises that feature griffins include Warhammer Fantasy Battle, Warcraft, Heroes of Might and Magic, there's the Griffin in Dungeons and Dragons, and lastly, My Little Pony, Friendship is Magic.
That is the second time that My Little Pony has been mentioned.
It is a crucial piece of pop culture. A griffin appears in the book series and movie The Spiderwick Chronicles. His name is Byron. He is found wounded by the Grace children in the book The Seeing Stone. He is portrayed as having the body of a lion and the head of a hawk. He behaves pretty much like a house cat in both book series and movies.
I am
Ruby. He serves as a steed for the Grace Children and Spiderwick himself. And he's just like another pet that I think it was Simon. He's known for just like having animals love him and having a ton of weird pets and stuff. And this griffin is just like so happy to be there.
I want a pet griffin.
Yeah, as a steed and a best friend.
Yeah.
In the Harry Potter series, the character Albus Dumbledore has a griffin-shaped knocker. In the films, it's a magical staircase hidden behind the statue of a griffin, with like the passcode needed to enter the headmaster's, whatever it's called, chamber's office.
Get it? Because it's a Gryffindor?
Area. Well, yeah. Here, this is the part that I liked. Character Godric Gryffindor's surname, as well as the house name for him, is a variation on the French phrase Griffon d'Or, two words, and it means the golden griffin.
These griffins are just dripping in gold.
I wish that were me. All right. In Rick Riordan's book, The Son of Neptune, part of the Heroes of Olympus series.
Here we go. We have now visited the Percy Jackson universe in a bit.
Percy Jackson, Hazel Levest, and Frank Zane are attacked by griffins in Alaska.
Like, I feel
very
like,
briefly.
I feel like I remember that.
Yeah, it's just, it's like a really quick moment.
Yeah.
They appear in two Chronicles of Narnia movies, The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, as well as Prince Caspian. Depictions of griffins are also frequently seen on school emblems or mascots for pretty much all education levels, but kind of like the Wampus Cat, very much like a like high school, college area. It's used in official seals of public or government organizations, as well as professional sports. And lastly, in 2013, the Cedar Point Amusement Park in Sandusky, Ohio, opened the Gatekeeper Steel Roller Coaster, which has a griffin as its mascot.
I love that you included Cedar Point.
I love the Gatekeeper. I love the Gatekeeper so much. Especially because there's a griffin on it. Oh my god.
Yeah, it is a fun ride.
It is. All right. That's all I have for the griffin. I know that that was long, but the Nemean Lion is super short because he lived.
Oh my god. He lived and then he died.
Pretty much. All right. The Nemean Lion, also sometimes just referred to as Leo. It's known in Greek as Nemeos Leon and Latin as Leo Nemeus. It was a vicious monster in Greek mythology that resided in either Nemea or Nemea. Go say Nemea so that we're all on the same page. Eventually killed by Hercules. I mean, add it to the list, I guess.
Yep.
I feel like he killed everything. The Nemean Lion could not be killed with the weapons of mortals due to its golden fur, which was said to be impervious to any attack, and it possessed claws which were sharper than any, like, mortal sword and stronger than any metal, able to cut through any armor. Mythologically, only the monster's own teeth and claws could penetrate its fur, which I love.
Nice.
I love when it all wraps back around, you know, it's very poetic. In Bibliotheca, Photius wrote that the dragon Ladon, who guarded the golden apples of immortality, was his brother.
Oh.
Family tree! Family tree! Everybody's related! Yay! The Nemean Lion is also one of the few Greek monsters to not have a proper name, and also to fully resemble a lion. Nothing else extra. It's just a really big lion.
Yeah, it's just a
big kitty.
Yeah.
Which I didn't think of until I started writing this. But like, it's true. Everything else has a little bit of human, a little bit of bird, and this is, oh my god, there's a hummingbird outside. Hi, baby. Her name is Tango. We have two. It's Pip and Tango.
Oh, oh my
bye,
god.
Baby. Okay.
I'm totally keeping that in.
Yeah, we talked about a bird. Anyways, yeah, it's just a lion, but, like, sized up.
The bird part of, like, this portion of the show is Pip and Tango.
Yeah, that was definitely Tango. Okay, today, lions are kind of obviously not a part of Greek fauna, but there is a lion referred to as the Asiatic lion subspecies, which did formerly range in southeastern Europe. And according to Herodotus, the lion populations were kind of still there in ancient Greece. George Schaller asserts that they may have been present in the area until 100 BC.
Okay.
They go had off lions.
Go off Greece. Greek lions.
Which I, because I didn't think about that before, but I was like, there's an awful lot of, like, either regular lion or mixed with a lion in this area for a place that definitely no longer has lions.
Yeah.
But I love that they did. And, like, I know that it's not recently, because now it's, like, 2,100 years ago, but at the same time, like, that's very recent. But yeah, I was like, 100 BC, that is nothing.
Yeah, that's...
that is a blanket, in... like, you know, like, when they do the math of, like, oh, the amount that, like, humans have been on Earth versus how old the Earth is like, a blink of an eye. Like, that is, that's nothing.
Yeah, when you put it into perspective, it's really not.
2,000 years. Nothing. There's been a lion there. I love it. Okay. Hesiod has the Nemean lion as the offspring of Orthus, who is the two-headed dog guarding Geryon's cattle. And once again, the famous ambiguous she, which is often understood to be referring to the chimera, echidna, or Ceto. According to Hesiod, the lion was raised by Hera and sent to terrorize the hills of Nemea. According to Apollodorus, he was the offspring of Typhon, so Typhon and Echidna, power duo of monstrosity. Talk about a family tree. God. In another tradition told by Aelian in Hyginus, the lion was the child of the moon goddess and titaness Selene, who threw him from the moon at Hera's request. The creature was said to be beloved by the goddess, who requested his presence on Earth so that she could send it after Hercules. She sent the lion to live in Nemea, but more specifically in, like, a cavern or a cave, which was famous at the time for being a shrine to Zeus. So,
ew.
The whole deal is spite at this point.
I feel like that's the deal with, like, all of Greece, though.
Well, especially involving Hercules. I mean, Hera and Hercules were not a good pair.
Yeah.
At all. Starting in infancy. Oh, God. Okay, going into the labors of Hercules. The first of Hercules' 12 labors, set by his cousin, King Eurystheus, was to slay the Nemean lion. Hercules wandered the area until he came to the town of, which I think is pronounced Cleone. There, he met a boy who said that if Hercules slew the Nemean lion and returned alive within 30 days, the town would sacrifice a lion to Zeus. But if he did not return or he died, the boy would then sacrifice himself to Zeus. Another version claims that he met Melorcos, who is a shepherd who has lost his son to the lion, saying that if he came back within 30 days, a ram would be sacrificed to Zeus. If he didn't, it would be sacrificed to the dead Hercules as a mourning offering.
He really went from 1 to 1,000 very fast.
You know. when searching for the lion, Hercules fetched some arrows to use against it, not knowing that the lion's golden fur was impenetrable. So when he found the lion and shot at it with the bow, he discovered the fur's protective property when the arrow bounced harmlessly off the creature's thigh.
Can you imagine being him, though?
I, like, would literally... He was, my body would take a screenshot.
He was ready to charge into battle. And then just...
Well, and you hit, like, the thigh, like, the flank. That's where you're supposed to... Like, imagine, like, it just, like, shatters. Like, what did we even do? And that's, like, all he had. Like, he had that in his club, which will feature later in the story. But... I feel like I'd be like, oh, I totally got this. And then my face would just, like, fall. Like, I would cry.
Yeah, exactly.
Son of Zeus or not, I would be losing it. That'd be it. It's like you and the underwater panther. I just break into a run.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Okay. After some time, Hercules made the lion return into his cave, which had two entrances. One of them Hercules blocked, and then he entered through the other. In the dark and close quarters, Hercules stunned the beast with his club, and then eventually killed the lion by strangling it with his bare hands, losing a finger in the process. So finally, The lion's laid dead by strangulation, and Hercules is trying to get like proof that it's dead. Okay, so no one's gonna go and check. No one's gonna be like, I think it's fine. Let's go into this cave and see if the lion is alive. So, okay, at the end of all this, he's been struggling a long time. Athena, noticing his plight, eventually told him to use one of the lion's own claws to skin the pelt. When he returned on the 30th day, carrying the carcass of the lion on his shoulders. So, I mean, you've probably seen this depicted at least once in art. Like, that's the pelt that he wears with, like, the head on top and stuff. Yeah, love it. King Eurystheus was amazed and terrified, and he forbade him from ever again entering the city. In the future, he had to display the fruits of his labors outside the city gates because he didn't want to see it. He was so scared that he was like, you can't do that in here. Okay.
Go take it outside.
You're gonna keep that out there.
Yeah.
And then he just sent him off to complete the next quest, which was to destroy the Lernaean Hydra.
Yeah. Moving real fast in the Greek timeline.
But what I love, he's like, you can't do this in here. Okay.
Yeah,
You
take it
can't do this.
outside. I don't want to look at it.
Please leave. Though he had been defeated, the Nemean lion's strength had so impressed Zeus that he put the lion in the sty, forming the constellation Leo as a reminder that the Nemean lion was the king of beasts. Some others say that it was Hera who placed him in the stars instead out of pity, which I personally think is much more feasible. Because
Probably.
Zeus is always impressed by like big animals that like did stuff or killed people, but I feel like in this case it makes much more sense for it to be Hera.
Yeah.
That was like, I'm so sorry.
Plus, Zeus is
Anyways,
a loser, so.
yeah. Hercules ended up erecting a tomb for his severed finger, and he marked it with a stone lion as a symbol of power, which pretty much began the tradition of erecting stone lions, not only at the tombs of people of stature, but also at the entrances to their palaces, temples, or other important places. And I say began the tradition in terms of like Europe, because Europe is slow. And it was definitely not the first time this has ever happened
I
in
love
Asia.
that he was so petty. He built a grave for his one finger.
It was definitely not the petty. This was the hero of like, it was a good fight, kind of.
Well, you know
Like
what?
you put up, like you put up a good fight. Same with that was why it would make sense that Zeus would put it in the sky as like, you still like you did it though. You gave what you were supposed to give. Okay.
Yeah.
Like, so whether you were good or on my side or not, like you were still insane. I mean, it killed a ton of people. There's a reason why King Eurystheus was like, sure, Hercules, why don't you go kill this lion?
Yeah.
I guess. If you really wanna be a hero, why don't you go kill this lion? The practice of protective lion statues standing guard is a concept widely seen in many cultures, such as the noble Chinese guardian lions, which are called Shishi, meaning stone lion. They date back to the Han Dynasty. They're found always in pairs, with the male, Yang, resting his right paw on a curved sphere, and the female, Yin, resting her left paw on a cub, symbolizing the cycle of life.
I just love big kitties so much.
The Shishu were thought to protect the building from harmful spiritual influences and harmful people who were thought to pose a threat. These stone lions are also called the Imperial Guardian Lions, and they are a traditional Chinese architectural ornament. But guardian lions are found in other Asian cultures with variations on the theme of life and death. Hercules wore the Nemean lion's coat after killing it, as it was impervious to all the elements and all but the most powerful weapons. But others say that Hercules's like pelt armor was in fact the hide of the lion of Cithaeron, which was another lion in Greek mythology, which was just harassing the lands of King Amphitryon and King Thespius. It's sometimes called the Thespian lion or the ravine lion, according to the Suda. Some myths say it was killed by Hercules, along with everything else. Others by Alcathous or the god Apollo. According to Alexander of Myndus, Hercules was helped in this labor by an earthborn serpent, which followed him to Thebes and settled down in Olise. It was later identified as the water snake, which devoured the sparrows and was turned to stone in the prophecy about the Trojan War.
Everything's about a freaking prophecy.
I wish it was like that now. I'd use a prophecy. Tell me what to do. Tell me what to do. There are numerous mentions and appearances of the Nemean lion in classical literature because it's, I mean, the labors of Hercules. Everybody's written about that.
Yeah.
Authors include Hesiod, Seneca, Ptolemy, Ovid in the Metamorphoses, and many others, like pretty much everybody. References trace back to as early as Greek epic poetry dating to the 8th or 7th century BC.
So a bit, like a bit. Yeah, no, that's still pretty long ago.
Yeah. In pop culture, the Nemean lion appears most prominently as a monster within Rick Riordan's Percy Jackson series. The first
appearance. Hello, Uncle Rick.
The first appearance is actually in the first book, despite starting more heavily in the third. In The Lightning Thief, when Percy, Annabeth, and Grover were on the train to Denver, Percy looks out the window and sees just this huge lion in the distance. And I think in the book, he was really like, that's weird, because there are no lions in Denver. Like, he was really like, that's a little suspicious. And then it's just like gone. And then it's also later shown, like, being defeated by Hercules during, like, the super cool firework display at Camp Half-Blood.
Yeah.
But in the third book, The Titan's Curse, the lion was sent by Luke Castellan and the General at the National Air and Space Museum to stop the group on their quest. It battled with Percy, who recognized it. Found the glimpse on the train in the first book.
He's like, wait, I've seen you before.
Which is so funny, because I really wonder whether in that moment he was like, oh, I totally remember you. Or it's like, well, there can only be so many lions. There can only be so many. It was incredibly hard to defeat due to its bullet and sword-proof pelt. It was even impervious to the arrows of the Hunters of Artemis. It was eventually vanquished by attacking the lion's only unprotected surface, its mouth. I vividly remember the scene in the book because right. Percy shoves the astronaut ice cream into its mouth to hold it open, and then they piss it off, and then they shoot flaming arrows into its mouth because it can't close it anymore.
It was really graphic.
I was like, oh my god. The creature dissolved except for its pelt, which was offered up to the god Poseidon. So once again, call back to the labors of Hercules. I mean, yeah, fair enough. The only other one I could find, which this dug it out of my memories, okay? The Nemean lion was depicted in the 2014 film Hercules, starring, can you guess? Do you remember this movie?
I don't think I do.
2014 film Hercules, starring Dwayne The Rock Johnson.
That's right!
You can look up a scene on YouTube. The CGI is actually really amazing. I rewatched the scene because I couldn't remember it being good or bad. I mean, because that was like 7 years ago.
Yeah.
But like, it's pretty awesome. There are like cool slow motion moments that I remember watching when I first saw this movie. It was actually pretty good. It did not look silly. It looked really good. I would totally recommend you watching it. If you look up the scene, it's there. But it looks really good.
Plus, it's the just rock a ideal man.
Big lion. And they did a really good job fighting it. I think it's also in a cave, just surrounded by bones. And he does try shooting it with an arrow. And it's like, I think it hits the lion like right between the eyes and it just shatters. The lion's like, hello.
If anyone could defeat the Nemean lion, it is the Rock.
I agree. And I wouldn't even be bad. The lion would probably just be like, fair enough. Fair enough.
They're like, oh my god, Dwayne Johnson! And they just keeled over and died. Oh my god,
I'm such a big fan. I'm your biggest fan. Alright, anyways, that's it. It doesn't really appear in a whole lot, apart from Hercules-based things. Because once again, it's just a big lion. So if people are going for an epic mythological monster, they normally go for stuff that is a little more, like, unusual.
Yeah.
Legendary or off, so everybody knows the lions.
Yeah, more unsettling
lions, but like I could go fight a lion. Like if I really wanted to, I could.
I feel like you could not, though.
No, I wouldn't say I would win. I could fight one. I would lose willingly.
True.
I offer myself up to the big kitty.
Take me as a sacrifice for all that you've done for us.
Yeah, I just lay down.
Oh. Yeah. Oh my
take
god.
Take me in your paws.
Take me.
Raise me up.
Oh my god.
Anyways.
Well.
That's it. Welcome to the end of Catastrophe, Mom.
That is a wrap. Thank you so much for introducing us to all of these big kitties. And as always, I will be posting photos of everything on the Instagram. You can follow us there at Blood and Guts Pod. We are on Twitter at @blood_gutspod. Email us anything you want, your movie reviews for the 2014 Hercules starring Dwayne Johnson. Email us those.
If they're bad reviews, you're getting blocked.
If it's only good reviews.
You're only allowed to say good things about the 2014 film starring Dwayne the Rock Johnson.
Yeah, yeah. And PSA for today, just find a big kitty in your life that will support you in all your endeavors. It doesn't have to be big. Just find a kitty.
Emotional support kitty.
Yeah, find your own emotional support kitty. And if you can't find one, or you can't afford one, or you can't take care of one, I will provide you free pictures of my emotional support kitties. I will.
I'm gonna go hunt the Nemean lion to give him one hug. One hug.
So what as we wrap this up, what was your favorite big kitty?
My favorite is still Mishi Peishu, the underwater panther.
Me too.
The coolest for me to learn
me
about.
Too. Mm-hmm. Yep. Just all of these kitties have been so. I love the fact that we're just calling them kitties. They're literally monsters of death. But all of these kitties have just been so cute and terrifying in their own different ways. And I have an immense amount of respect for them.
They're all very powerful. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. I know that, like, this month, the subject matter is not at all true crime. But you know what? You got to learn somehow, okay?
Yeah.
Not everybody read the Percy Jackson series at age, like, 8, okay, and then never got over it.
And some you are here to fix that.
Need it, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah, if anything, hearing me say Peter Dinklage, Rick Riordan's Percy Jackson series, you'll just get Stockholmed into doing it. I hold you down and I just repeat Percy Jackson over and over and be like, well, I might as well.
Yeah,
you probably
exactly.
Don't even have to anymore. I've mentioned it so many times. You probably know everything. I do a couple more of these months. Basically got a whole synopsis.
Basically. Well, we will be back with our regularly scheduled true crime and murder program next week. But until then, have a, God, what's a good pun that I could make?
Have a possum day.
Exactly. That is what I am looking for. This is the drive I like to see. Have a possum day, everyone. Bye.
Have a perfect day.
Bye. Yes.